So tell me a little bit about what's going on, where you are now, and where you'd like to get to.
Gotcha. Okay. A formerly morbidly obese man, I started my weight loss journey back in May 2018. Mm-hmm. So quite recent. I was over 350 pounds thereabouts. Fat guys don't weigh themselves, so that's the sort of round figure I arrived at. 350 sounded about right. It could have been more, could very easily have been more, but as you know, fat guys don't stand on weighing scales. So followed whole food plant-based protocol. I tried to extrapolate as much as I could from Pendjalet's book using sort of Ray Cronese's technique with the metabolic winter hypothesis, and started using cold showers, whole food plant-based, did the 2 weeks of potatoes only, the whole thing. It was after Kevin Smith had his heart attack, and he's the same age as myself, so it made me take a long, hard look at what I was doing with my life and where I was. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to keep this brief because I know we have only 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. But in less than a year, I dropped over 150 pounds.
Okay. Congratulations.
Thank you, which is delighting. So I'm no longer morbidly obese, no longer pre-diabetic, no longer hypertension. Everything's brilliant now. And I've taken to running. Running is where I'm at now. I ran 5 marathons last year. I started running only a year ago and ran 5 marathons in the last year. I ran my first marathon a year after I sat down to my first potato. So I went from morbidly obese to marathon in a year. So I was very delighted with that. Then came December, which was my first anniversary from when I started running. I ran 3 marathons that month.
Okay.
So I've become a bit obsessed with the running bug.
Okay. So where are you now, and what's the gap between where you are and where you'd like to be?
Right. Well, where I am now is I feel I've plateaued, Howard. I feel like I've plateaued, and I'm still overweight. I've gotten down from morbidly obese. I had my BMI was in the mid 40s. I'm now just floating at 26, 27 of a BMI, which 25 would be ideal. Mm-hmm. I've put on a little bit of weight. I did go down to 198, which was the lowest I'd got to. I'm now floating around 207 pounds.
Okay.
So it would be nice to get sub 190 by April, because in April I run my first ultra marathon.
Okay. So lose about 20 pounds-ish.
Roughly, yeah, around that ballpark, yeah.
So what makes you think that that's the right number? Like, if we leave BMI and calculations and externalities out of it, what in your body says this would be where I want to be?
I guess because it was never my intention to embrace athletics. It was never my intention to be a runner. It was just to lose weight. Running was just my reward for losing weight. But now that I've gotten into it, and now I've set myself this target of an ultra marathon, I want to be more athletically fit rather than just have lost weight and feel good about myself. Now I want to just sort of dial it in, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I want to just sort of get the physique of an athlete almost, even though I'm 48 years of age, you know. I don't think it's unattainable. It's a goal I've set myself, because running has become part of a recovery from the bereavement of losing my son. There's a whole long, long-winded story behind this. So running has really helped me with my mental well-being first and foremost. But now I have ambitions to be more of an athlete. I've never been an athlete. Back when I was 18, I guess, was the last time I did anything like this. So that's a 30 years ago.
Yeah, I'm curious when you if you have specific moments when you felt that awakening of a desire to be an athlete. Was it at a point in a race? Was it when you were, you know, shopping for singlets? Like, was there a moment or two that you can think where you started feeling this new identity calling you?
I think it was during the third marathon I did last month in December. Sorry, the month before last in December, I ran a marathon, my third marathon in December on New Year's Eve. I wanted to finish the year doing a marathon. And having done a marathon 2 weeks prior to that, and then my first official marathon 2 weeks prior to that, the third one was really tough, like incredibly tough. And it actually took me aback at how tough it was. And I figured then I am actually not mentally, I'm in the condition I want to, I want to do this, but physically I'm just not catching up to my, where I want to be mentally. And it was during that race where I thought, if I want to take this seriously, if I want to be a runner, and particularly an endurance runner and a long distance runner, I need to be more athletic, basically. Because I'm still overweight. I'm still carrying extra pounds that are causing me problems because I'm keep getting this repeated injury.
Okay.
In my Achilles, and I know if I was lighter, I it probably wouldn't be so recurring, and so.
Okay.
That's part of the reasoning, yeah. I guess. Yeah.
Okay. So, do you feel like you know what to do? Like, if we could just, you know, punch in a computer code, and you would simply follow it automatically. Mm. Like, would you know what to do to get that 20 pounds off? Or is it a little bit like, look, I'm running, I'm eating really well, and it's a mystery?
I to be honest, I think because I started running, I'm probably justifying being more relaxed in my discipline with food. Like, going whole food plant-based, I was incredibly disciplined, but I think over the Christmas period, the holidays period, and Veganuary, which just occurred, my kid participated in Veganuary. He's been vegetarian for over a year, and he's now gone vegan. So there's a lot of junk food, vegan junk food, is coming in, and I'm probably getting relaxed when I come in after a run.
Okay.
And I open the fridge and there's this junky shite, yeah, in the fridge, and it's, yeah, it's too tempting not to. So I guess that, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you said probably. Mm. So when I hear the word probably, my bullshit detector goes off.
Yeah.
So can you say it? Is it just as true if you say it without the word probably?
Yes, of course.
So let's hear that.
You can see right through me, Harriet. Yeah, that was, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm being more relaxed. I'm not as disciplined with food, and I am succumbing to the temptations of junk. Yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Okay, so what have you tried?
What have I tried
to overcome this? Have you tried anything, or are you just simply noticing it?
I guess I'm noticing it, and I'm aware of it, obviously, because I have been morbidly obese in my life. I spent like 20 years building up to being overweight, overweight, and then from obesity to morbid obesity. So I know the patterns, and I recognize that it's happening again, and maybe I'm a little bit afraid of slipping back into old habits.
Okay. So what do you think is the gateway into slipping back into old habits? Being unrelaxed, being too strict?
Not being strict enough, I think.
Okay.
It was discipline that got me to lose the weight and to,
okay,
get healthy.
Uh-huh. And so I asked you what you've tried, mm, to overcome that.
Mm-hmm.
And so have you tried anything, or are you just simply, like, at the moment, just sort of noticing that you've relaxed your standards?
Have I tried to, other than noticing? I guess not. Not yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this is going to be easy.
Yeah.
So give me an example of where your eating has become more relaxed than you want it to be.
I guess when you open the fridge and you see vegan mayonnaise and you see artificial cheese substitutes that are, you know, and I recognize that this, the whole umami salt, sugar, fat thing, that they're designed, you know, in a lab to be delicious. And and again, it's always after a run and you feel justified because you've been out for 90 minutes.
Okay. So I'm gonna point out another linguistic thing that I'm noticing.
If I said probably again.
you keep saying you as if you're talking to me. Like, you know how you look in the fridge.
Right, okay.
So I'm just sort of noticing and reflecting back to you. Because what I'm feeling is, like, you've got the weight of this story of really doing a remarkable thing that very few people have ever done and being rightfully proud of it.
Thank you.
And at the same time, it feels to me, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong or argue or call bullshit or hang up,
no.
that you're using that story as, like, something in the bank.
Yeah. Jesus. Yeah. That's giving me pause, yeah. That, like, so you've really given me pause. You've thrown me off there.
No.
I'm grateful that you've said that. Yeah, no, it's...
I took it as a compliment.
You've put a mirror up in front of me, yeah. I've done something that, you know, that you've just said that many people do not succeed in doing. I just think I'm terrified that I'll go back. That's what I'm scared of, that it's...
Yeah,
that I'll slip back into that pattern that caused me to be morbidly obese and incredibly depressed, because I've always maintained, and I've said this, I've come to this realization recently, that I'm not cured from morbid obesity. I feel like I'm in remission. That it's this slippery slope, is this danger, and I guess maybe running is. I'm running from that. I think when I started running early on, and I was still quite large, I do remember being out in the rain, and an old fella walking his dog noticed me, and he laughed, and he just said, "Ah, who's chasing you?" And I laughed it off and carried on running. But as I left him, I just thought, like, "Who's chasing me?" And I guess really, who's chasing me is myself, the morbidly obese version of myself. I'm still trying to outrun that guy because I still am that guy, essentially. I might not look like him anymore or feel like him anymore or do things like him anymore, but
yeah.
I could become him again very easily.
Yeah. Well, so I think you could argue that that's not true. And I didn't say that I could argue that's not true. I think you could argue that that's not true. That it would take a gargantuan effort for you to become him again.
Right.
So I don't, you know, let's hold that thought.
Okay.
But I certainly hear, and I heard in your description about, you know, Kevin Smith and the depression that this was, it started out as, I need to avoid a bad thing.
Well, I nearly lost my father at my age, and I was early 20s when it happened, and it devastated me from a massive coronary, and that's where I was going. And my kid is only, he was 10 at the time, I was about to turn 10 at the time, and I was like, I can't do that to him. I can't devastate him like that. So I nearly needed to really take the bull by the horns and rescue myself, because I was reaching out to people all the time, like the likes of David Clark and people like that. I saw him on the Forks Over Knives website and reached out to him going, how the fuck did you do that? Teach me, help me. And just, you know, and it took me years to realize that the only person who's going to save me is me.
Right.
So I've got to do it. Nobody's going to do it for me. So,
right. So something very important has happened in the past couple of months, these three marathons,
yeah,
that these are the invitation. The way you described it is like, I want to be an athlete now. Now you're chasing. You're no, like, this is the shift.
Right.
And it's happened in the midst of a lot of physical exertion, so you could miss it mentally and emotionally a little bit, or miss the significance of it. That what's happened is you have grown a positive identity of now you're the one chasing rather than you're the one running away from being chased. And so the question, like, to tell me, you say you want to be an athlete. Like, what does that mean to you? Can you give me an example of like a couple of your favorite athletes?
I don't have any. I've never been into sports, Howard. I used to play Gaelic football as a child, and up until about 15 or 16, I quit because my interests became more into comic books and music and rock and roll and stuff. So I left all that behind.
All right. Okay. Who do you look up to as a peak performer in whatever domain? Musically.
Oh, musically would be Prince, obviously. Yeah.
Prince.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But
what do you know about Prince's approach to his own development?
Hard fucking work. Doing the work. Never stop doing the work. Working becomes your life. That was what he did. He lived and breathed music. And he never had. It was never a day off. It was never a job. Performing was his time off from work, almost. You know, he was always in the studio. He was always recording. He has hundreds of thousands of unreleased hours of work locked in a vault. You know, he's the master.
So what about him? What are the values that he represents to you that you connect with, that you either feel like you embody or that you aspire to embody in some degree?
I've never thought about Prince in that regard, but that's a good question. I've always seen him as a big brother, you know, insofar as that the philanthropy he was involved in, you know, getting involved with charities and cultivating altruism and compassion, working with the Black Lives Movement, being a vegan who refused to serve meat to in the performances he put on, stuff like that. That was just, you know, writing slave on his face and, you know, being a rebel.
And in terms of his commitment to his craft and to himself, is there anything in there that you admire, aspire to, identify with?
I did spend a few years trying to be a guitar player, and I used to buy all the pedals that he had and tried to recreate his sound. And once I recreated his sound, I got rid of the pedals. It was like, okay, that's how you do it. I figured that out and then moved on. I never utilized it in my own songwriting or anything like that. I just finding out how he got a certain sound and then extracting
from the details. Simply, like, it seems to me that the way you first described him is his whole life, the focus, that you lit up when you were talking about it. Like, In your own life, not about music or guitar sounds, is there anything about that kind of commitment that then spills over into altruism that appeals to you?
You're giving me pause again, Howard, because I've never really thought in how I relate to Prince on that kind of level. I don't know how to answer that. Sorry. Okay.
What if Prince were your life coach?
Yeah.
Right. He's your big brother. You've spent a lot of time with him. You're in his head a little bit. What if he were in yours? How would you come home from a run and think about food if Prince was your coach?
Okay. I would be embarrassed to be taking the vegan mayonnaise and the fake cheese and just sort of going like, yeah.
So what would you do instead? What would you do to, and then hold it out? You have any Prince posters?
Sure, I have a framed picture of Prince right there next to me.
Okay, so what if that became your altar, and you brought your food and you showed it to the poster of Prince and said, "Here's what I'm going to eat."
Right.
Because I'm honoring your life by embodying your commitment, and in my case, it's this healthy athlete that I want to be because I have a podcast and people are going to look up to me the way I looked up to Dave Clark. And I want to give it my all. What would you put on that plate after you come back from a run to hold up to Prince?
It would probably be a bowl of steamed broccoli with some nutritional yeast sprinkled on top, or something simple and wholesome and life-giving and not just.
Okay, you said probably again.
No, that's what I would do. That's what I would do, because I have done that from time to time. I've come home and done that and felt great afterwards. Okay. I felt great because I've had, I eat it from the pot, the steamed broccoli from the pot. I don't even put it out in the bowl. I just wolf it down because it invigorates you.
Okay.
Whereas that other stuff just really, you're in a funk afterwards from that other stuff. But it's I guess it's laziness, is it? I don't know. Jesus.
You know what? It doesn't matter what it is, because I just heard you make a decision to stop doing it.
This has been a great conversation. Thank you. So, fucking hell. Yeah. No, I could feel the switch click inside my skull.
Yeah. What I hear is that you know exactly what to do. You know exactly what your standards are. When's your next opportunity to test this new athletic resolve, as you know, that food is part of your training?
Tomorrow morning when I come home from my run.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I want you to picture yourself coming home from the run. You open the fridge and you're going to see the vegan cheese and the mayo. And imagine you're standing in front of the fridge. What's going on inside you? Are there any voices? There are bound to be habitual noises and impulses to have the other stuff, right? Because we can't just magically wave it away.
I guess you kind of say it's just this time. It's kind of justifying it to yourself. You justify cheating yourself.
Beautiful. So the voice in your head is going to go, Ian, what's the big deal? You've lost 150 pounds. You ran 3 marathons in December. Nobody can take that away from you. You're getting your family to start eating vegan now. Like, let's not become an asshole about this. Just have a little bit of the mayo.
Yeah.
So what's the answer?
The answer is I eat the broccoli. The answer is I put the nooch on top and I eat it from the bowl. And maybe a sprinkle of Himalayan rock salt, and that's it. And leave it at that and let that fill me up.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're going to eat like an athlete.
Yes, that's what I'm going to do.
Right.
Yeah.
You're right. You've been training like an athlete. Now eating is part of your training,
because
you know that food and recovery are as important as the hours you spend on the road.
Yes.
I think you got this.
This has been a real, I'm very grateful for this conversation exchange, Howard. That was brilliant.
Whoa.
Man, you just unlocked something in me, man. That was brilliant. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. I could see it. There's a saying that I love, that we can't read our own label because we're inside the bottle. But it's very, your commitment beyond yourself is very clear. And you brought to me, the first thing you said is, I now see myself as an athlete. So there, right? You just have to see yourself as an athlete in front of the fridge too.
Yes. Yes. That is,
You got this.
Thanks, man.
A pleasure.
Yeah. I have one other question. We've got a couple of minutes left, if that's okay. Just one question.
Yeah, go ahead.
In terms of the baggy, flappy skin, which I have in abundance, it flaps around, and it's again. The more weight if I pull it and I stretch it, I'm beginning to see abs. I'm beginning to see the V and stuff. If I pull the skin in my body to see the what muscles are starting to appear underneath. Is surgery the only way to get rid of this shite, or do I have to live with it, you know?
I am utterly unqualified to answer that question.
Okay.
What I will say is this. So as you know, I've been working with Josh Lajani for almost 4 years.
Sure.
And he has discovered that over the years, skin is a dynamic living organism. Mm-hmm. There's a lot less than, he still puts on his shirt that he used to wear. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more loose fabric on the shirt than there is loose skin around his body.
Yeah.
I know people who have had the surgery for whom it has not gone well.
I'm not into doing the surgery, by the way. That's, just wondering, are there alternatives?
You will, if Josh is any guide, over the years, it will tighten.
Okay.
You can have amazing abs underneath it.
Yeah.
And this may be the scar that you carry.
Yeah. No, I do, in a way, I do see it as a badge of honor. Almost that, it kind of shows the world that, I've been through some shit and I've lived to tell the tale kind of thing. And I've got this broken belly button to prove it,
Yeah. There's people who won't believe you, right? There's people whose brains can't believe that you weighed 350 or more pounds. Mm. Right. It's going to be a story and you're going to be suspect in their eyes. Mm. And you lift your shirt, and all of a sudden, you have credibility through the fucking roof.
Right.
So however you want to influence the world, that is probably your biggest asset. And that's where the story can live. Yeah. The story can live in your belly instead of carrying it around in your head.
Yeah. This has been a wonderful chat, man. Thank you.
You're very welcome. It was wonderful getting to know you.
Yeah, that was brilliant. I go to this fitness sort of cross training thing a couple of nights a week for older lads like myself. And there was one guy there who, when he found out that I'd lost so much weight, we had a chat for about 45 minutes after one of the sessions, and I just told him to stop eating things with a barcode, told him about the whole food plant-based, all this kind of stuff. And he was the only person I ever did that with, and pulled up my shirt and showed him, because he looked like exactly like what I looked like.
Mm.
And I could see his eyes, and he came back to me, and he lost 10 pounds in 10 days, and he's still going,
Yeah.
It's wonderful to be able to share, this with others,
Fantastic. Yeah, and that's, that's the other half of what you so admired about Prince.
Mm.
Right? He overflowed and other people benefited.
Yeah.
So
I've never thought of Prince in this kind of scenario at all in my life. And it makes a lot of sense. Thank you, Howard.
You're so welcome.